Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Caroline.
And I'm Kristen.
So, Kristen, do you like to garden?
I would like to be able to garden.
Yeah, I don't have much of a green thumb. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, I go to Target or wherever or the local gardening store mm-hmm. and pick up some seeds.
Yeah.
But the things that I do with the seeds are a little bit different than what they used to do with the seeds in ancient Egypt.
Yes, in terms of... You probably water your seeds.
I do. Mm-hmm.
Whereas in ancient Egypt, you might have urinated on your seeds.
Right. And this is not actually about gardening. No. Today we're talking about pregnancy tests.
Yes, the history of pregnancy tests. This is a many times over requested podcast topic. And I'm so glad that people have requested it because... As you can probably imagine, pregnancy tests have a pretty colorful history, tracing back to 1350 BC in ancient Egypt, and where pregnancy tests involved urinating on seeds. And this is from a great timeline that we found from the National Institutes of Health.
Right. Women would urinate on barley seeds and wheat seeds. Mm-hmm. And if the barley seed sprouted, the woman was thought to be carrying a boy. Whereas if the wheat grew, she would be painting her pyramid nursery pink.
And if neither sprouted, she supposedly would not be pregnant.
Yeah. And this sounds really ridiculous. Like this would definitely not work or have any sort of significance at all. But actually in the 1960s, some scientists tested this and found that pregnant women's urine actually did promote seed growth. Whereas, like, if you were not pregnant or if you were a man, no dice.
Yeah, 70% of the time.
Yeah, that's...
So maybe we should bring that back. Go buy some wheat seeds.
70, you know what? 70%, I'm just not going to go with that. That's just not enough accuracy.
But it would be a completely organic pregnancy test.
True, but what a mess. Where would you keep it?
I mean, I don't really want to answer that question in detail on this podcast.
You're right.
You know, you could somehow make it happen. But moving on, and also
yes, please,
speaking,
let's move on.
And speaking of urine, because urine comes up a lot in pregnancy tests. Mm-hmm. Still have to do it, and this is actually one of the earliest examples of primitive urinalysis, mm-hmm. which is what pregnancy tests today are. It's mm-hmm. just a form of urinalysis. But during the Middle Ages, and this is up through the 17th century, some men who were called, and this is a little bit crass, but this is actually what they were called. This is from cited in National Institutes of Health. Google it. It's all over the place. Piss prophets.
Okay? Right.
These men called piss prophets would examine the color of someone's urine.
And the description is horrific.
Oh, yeah. If a woman had, and this is... Wow, just so, so specific. If a woman had clear, pale, lemon color, leaning toward off-white, having a cloud on its surface, prego.
Yep. Congratulations. You're pregnant.
Yeah.
Because your urine is cloudy.
Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, they'd also mix wine with urine to test for any visible reaction that might happen. And alcohol actually does react with certain proteins in urine. So this might have been successful sometimes.
Yeah. The thing is, these ancient medics were not all that off base in their obsession with women's urine to test for pregnancy. Mm-hmm. In the early 20th century, scientists identified two key hormones that have to do with pregnancy. We've got progesterone, which is the hormone that promotes gestation. And then they identified the hormone HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, which is produced only when, or shortly after, I should say, a fertilized egg attaches to the uterine lining.
Right. And the same scientist who identified HCG tested for pregnancy by injecting a woman's urine into an immature rodent.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a reaction, this is the so-called AZ test because based on their last names, Asheim and Zondek. Mm-hmm. Could I be pronouncing those correctly?
I think you could be.
According to this test, if the rodent went into heat despite its immaturity, it would mean that the woman to whom the urine belonged was preggers.
And this is an example of a bioassay, which means that some kind of chemical or hormone in humans could have a reaction in another animal.
Right, in animals, yeah.
Another mammal. But you could have a bioassay between two different animals. It doesn't just have to be human to rodent.
Right, and this test was taken a step further by Lancelot Hogben, who is not a fictional Harry Potter character. Lancelot Hogben in South Africa. He adapted the test to be conducted using frogs.
But for some reason, that one really never took off.
They probably kept hopping away.
But then in the 1930s, we have Dr. Maurice Friedman at the University of Pennsylvania discover that injecting urine into a female rabbit could detect pregnancy. Hence, we have the rabbit test, which is why, and I don't want to give away anything for those of you who have not caught up with all your Mad Men.
I've never seen it.
Well, it takes place, as you probably know, in the 60s, mm-hmm. and there is a character who at some point has to go get a rabbit test.
Man, they were still doing it in the 60s?
Yeah, and that's what made me think about it. And there's also an episode of MASH where...
Yeah, with Hot Lips.
Mm-hmm, where Hot Lips has to go...
And they want to kill Radar's rabbit.
Yeah.
Well, basically this test works by injecting urine, again, into a rabbit. And if HCG is present, it tricks the rabbit's body into thinking it's pregnant and stimulates the ovaries. And it kind of spurs the growth of these tissue structures called the corpora lutea and corpora hemorrhagica. Unfortunately for the rabbit, the only way to tell if the things were growing is to euthanize and dissect.
Yes. So that's why there is the common phrase, the rabbit died, to say that a woman is pregnant.
Sort of a grim way to announce your pregnancy.
Right, because it has to do. But the thing is, though, this was, I think, from Snopes.com. They were clearing up the phrase of the rabbit is dying, meaning that a woman is definitely pregnant. Because the thing is, if the rabbit died, she could be pregnant or not, because no matter what, to test it, the rabbit's got to die.
The rabbit always dies.
The rabbit always dies.
Whether you're pregnant or not. We get into more, non-animal science, not involving rabbits.
No bioassays.
Right. In the 70s, when greater strides were made towards the tests we're more familiar with now, scientists still weren't exactly sure about the role of HCG in normal pregnancy or what normal levels should be. But in 1976, the FDA approval was sought for the early pregnancy test, which actually became known as the error-proof test, or EPT. Mm-hmm. And in 1977, EPT was ready for the U.S. market.
Yeah, and we have actually cancer research to thank for the home pregnancy test, because HCG shows up when a woman or when a fertilized egg attaches to the uterine lining, like I said earlier, but it also shows up in the development of certain cancers. Hmm. So some scientists were looking into whether or not they could develop some sort of early cancer detection tests, and along the way were able at the same time to develop these home pregnancy tests, which, as you can imagine, this isn't too long after birth control arrives on the market. What was it? 1972 is the year, I want to say, when it became available to married and unmarried women alike. So then you have a few years later following on that, the at-home pregnancy test. And like you said, in 1978, it becomes advertised in major women's magazines, including Mademoiselle, McCall's, Red Book, etc.
Right. So it was pretty much widespread and accepted by then. And actually, one article in 1979 in one of these women's magazines said it was giving props to the home pregnancy test because it said that it protected women's privacy who didn't want their doctors to know they were sexually active.
Right, because it could still be taboo to go, if you're a single woman,
right,
to go into your doctor's office and have to get a pregnancy test and then be slut-shamed by your gynecologist.
Gosh.
That's no fun.
No.
And one of the advertisements from, this is coming from 1978 in Mademoiselle, says, for your $10, you get pre-measured ingredients consisting of a vial of purified water, a test tube containing, among other things, sheep red blood cells, as well as a medical dropper and a clear plastic support for the test tube with an angled mirror at the bottom.
So you can pretend to be a scientist.
Yes, you have to be a little bit of a scientist. And there is a description of a woman who had, she was recalling taking one of these very early at-home pregnancy tests. And she said that it really wasn't that easy to use, as you can imagine from all of the things that come in this box for your $10. She said, you pretty much felt like a chemist. And you had to put the drops of urine into a tube and shake it up and put a stick with white beads in it and hold the tube and turn it upside down.
There's no way I would be coordinated enough.
Yeah. So, it has since come a long way. And in 2003, the FDA approved Clear Blue Easy's digital pregnancy test that got rid of the line that you had to detect and just says pregnant, not pregnant.
Right. Easy enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I would still take 50. I would make sure to get 50. I'd pull a Murphy Brown.
Well, that's a good.
Yes, I did just reference a 1991 TV show.
Elaborate on your Murphy Brown reference, please.
No, Murphy Brown in an episode of Murphy Brown. Took, what was it, 20 or 21 pregnancy tests, and they were all positive. So I would absolutely Murphy out.
Well, see, that was the question that I had as I was researching home pregnancy tests. Accuracy. Can we trust these tests? And they're pretty reliable. According to WebMD, WebMD suggests you take a pregnancy test when you experience a missed period, nausea, breast tenderness, fatigue.
Right. But most sources also suggest you wait until after you've missed a period, because if you take it any earlier, the level of HCG could be too low or the embryo might not have been implanted yet. So all these tests that say, oh yeah, 99% accuracy, like the day after you have sex, I'd wait a little bit.
Yeah, you might want to wait. And also you have to take into account, if you've had a lot of liquids right before you take your test, it could dilute the results.
Right.
And here's the one thing about home pregnancy tests that is a little troubling. A false negative, saying that you are not pregnant when in fact you are, is more common.
That's terrifying.
It's more common than a false positive, especially if, like you said, Caroline, if you take the test a little too soon, before you've missed that first period.
Right. And actually, there are several things, that can affect whether you get the correct answer. if you're taking fertility drugs that contain HCG, you risk getting a false positive. Mm-hmm. Also, if you've recently been pregnant, if you have ovarian cysts, have experienced an ectopic pregnancy, or if you're menopausal, you risk getting a false positive.
So those are just some things to keep in mind. It's not saying that home pregnancy tests aren't very reliable. You just have to, keep in mind that there are a lot of different things going on to detect that, accurately detect that HCG.
And I just want to assure people that most medicines do not affect pregnancy tests. And so if you're on birth control or antibiotics, don't worry.
And even though we have just outlined a number of caveats about home pregnancy tests, statistically, they are 97% accurate if you follow the directions carefully. And of course, as we always say in the podcast, with anything related to the female body, if you're concerned, go see your doctor, go see your nurse practitioner, get a urine test there, or you can go take a blood test, which is performed at a doctor's office, which is used less often, but it can detect pregnancy earlier, although it takes longer to get the results.
Right. So if you want to be really sure and you're okay with waiting, yeah, definitely go to your doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if your pregnancy test says that you're pregnant, then you should go to a doctor.
You should really go to the doctor.
that's a good time. But here's the thing. We found this article on feminism and home pregnancy tests, asking the question of whether or not home pregnancy tests are a feminist technology. And I fully expected the answer to be a resounding yes.
Yeah. And, Linda Lane, the article is called "The Home Pregnancy Test, a Feminist Technology?" She says no, that they're not, because it takes away women's autonomy and self-knowledge.
Right. Because going into this research, I assumed that the answer would be yes, because I think you mentioned earlier that one of the articles from 1979 says, finally, women, you don't have to risk going to the doctor and being shamed if you need to take a pregnancy test. But she says that home pregnancy tests have actually kind of undercut the need for better women's healthcare and prenatal care. Because we can now just go to the drugstore and for 10 bucks, 15 bucks, go buy a home pregnancy test, or you can even get like a value pack, a pregnancy test, and take care of it like that. And she says that 15 to 20% of confirmed pregnancies end in early spontaneous abortion, aka miscarriage. And since most occur within the first weeks of pregnancy, she argues that there are advantages to performing the test later.
Right.
Which there are. I mean, that's like we said, you need to wait until you miss that first period probably to get better, more accurate results.
Yeah, she says that giving yourself a test too early could lead to undue stress, whether the pregnancy is wanted or whether it's not. Because, you know, let's say you do want to be pregnant. You're very excited. You've been trying. You take that test really early and it says positive, and then you're one of those 15 to 20% of people who have an early miscarriage. That could, you know, be heartbreaking. But then, you know, there's also the other side where, let's say somebody doesn't want this pregnancy. It was not expected. Then they've got to start thinking about, oh my gosh, well, what am I going to do? You know, am I going to have this baby? Am I not? You know, a lot to think about when, you know, if you would just wait a while, you know.
Well, and Lane also argues that the availability of home pregnancy tests, kind of having that fail safe there at the drugstore that anyone can go out and purchase, has distracted us from paying closer attention to our bodies, to our menstrual cycles, to our reproductive systems, and not paying attention to the physical signs that might indicate pregnancy, instead relying on massive drug companies to sell us these urine sticks.
Yeah, she says the only feminist pregnancy test is to listen to your body, to all those things that WebMD talked about, the missed period, nausea, breath tenderness, and fatigue.
Although I think it's a compelling point, though. She says that one feminist method to determine if you're pregnant is by doing a pelvic self-exam
I don't know about that.
Exactly. I don't know how to do a pelvic self-exam. Maybe that, you know, this is a...
I don't have a speculum lying around.
Yeah, she says, a contributor to the National Institutes of Health website recalls having had a plastic speculum around from the do-it-yourself pelvic exam days.
Were there do-it-yourself pelvic exam days? I missed them.
Apparently. And she said she used to diagnose her first pregnancy by observing changes in her cervix. I think that would be... Okay.
Okay. That I look terrified, so calm me down.
You do look kind of terrified, but that would be pretty incredible to be that in tune with your body that you can observe the own changes in your cervix. I get where Lane's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I get it too. But...
I'm not completely on board with this notion that home pregnancy tests are anti-feminist.
Right.
But I get what she's saying. I think that perhaps we should, expand the, I don't want to say arsenal because that sounds so militant, but perhaps expand the resources available to us, including perhaps do-it-yourself pelvic self-exam.
I'm not doing it.
And I mean, but
I'm not.
But Caroline Lane also says that a friend could help you do it. So you know what?
Kristen, what are you doing later? What? No, I like my gynecologist. I've gone to her for 10 years. I will stick with her.
And listeners out there, if you have any recollection of the do-it-yourself pelvic exam days, or if you're familiar with this and doing pelvic self-exams, please write us in and let us know. I'm genuinely curious to know more.
Yeah, me too.
About
I've never
this.
Heard about it.
Yeah. And I think with that, I think that's our history of home pregnancy tests.
A brief history of peeing on seeds and killing rabbits.
But how fascinating, though. We got to learn about piss profits.
I know. And about what they looked for in urine, which grosses me out.
That's going to be my favorite fact of the week, Caroline.
I know. That's my new band name also.
Yes. We should start the Piss Profits band name. And if you'd like to join our band, send us an email.
Yeah.
momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And I have an email here from Daniel. I just have one to read today because it's just so great.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually one of my favorite emails we've ever gotten. This is in response to our episode on douching, entitled Bag the Douche. And it goes like this. Your douche podcast reminded me of a traumatic episode of my childhood. During the time period when Massengill was airing your favorite commercial, so eloquently acted out during the podcast, I thank you, my older brother and cousin put me up to something dastardly. I was perhaps 7 or 8 and the older children convinced me that I should go up to my grandmother and reenact said commercial. While they hid outside her bedroom door, I slowly stepped into the room and asked,
oh no.
Grandma, can I ask you a personal question? Yes, Daniel. Grandma, do you douche? No, but I used to. We don't have sex anymore.
Oh no.
I ran from the room screaming while my brother and cousin died laughing in the hallway. Your podcast, while also informative, brought me back to this humorous memory of my childhood. I now need to devise an appropriate revenge for my brother.
That's great.
Grandma, do you douche?
Awesome. He got a little more information than he requested.
So thank you to everyone who has written in. momstuff@howstuffworks.com is the email address. And if there's anything about the history of home pregnancy tests we failed to leave out, send it our way, please. Or you can post it over on our Facebook page, or you can alert us on Twitter. Our tag is @momstuffpodcast, or you can find us on our blog. It's Stuff Mom Never Told You from howstuffworks.com. Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.